Former Senator Olympia Snowe on fixing Congress from the outside. Olympia Snowe's retirement from the U.S. Senate sent shockwaves through political circles here in Maine and in our nation's capital. She cited frustration with the hyper-partisanship and gridlock in Congress as the main reason for walking away from the Senate. Since leaving what's known as the world's most exclusive club, she's written a book outlining her ideas about how to get the Senate and Congress working again. Can it really be done? Is there the political will? And how does she plan to get citizens to care about the inner workings of Congress? Joining us from a studio in Washington, former U.S. Senator from Maine, Olympia Snowe. What do you want to ask your former senator? Email us at talk@mpbn.net, tweet at MaineCalling, post to our Facebook page, or give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. That's 1-800-399-3566. Senator Snowe's call to action. This is Maine Calling.
Broadcast of Maine Calling is made possible by MPBN Radio listener contributions and by Patriot Subaru, providing sales, service, and accessories on new and pre-owned all-wheel drive Subarus on Route 1 in Saco.
Senator Olympia Snowe, welcome to Maine Calling, and thank you so much for joining us. I'm sure our listeners are very eager to hear what you have to say.
Well, it's great to be here with you this afternoon. Jennifer and Keith, thank you for having me. I'm delighted to be able to speak to the people of Maine.
Senator Snowe, you wrote your book from an office in Portland, looking out on Portland Harbor. What kind of perspective did that give you, given that you were writing about Washington?
Exactly. It sort of continues to ground me every time I'm in Maine. And as I said, in my, in paying tribute to the people of Maine, they grounded me in the values of public service. So it gave me a chance to sit back and to reflect on my career, what was important, and how we must conduct ourselves in public office and public service.
Those of us here in Maine who have followed your career are not surprised by your frustration with the partisanship in Congress. Maybe on the national stage, your book, the things you say in your book will come as a surprise, but probably not to anybody in Maine. So I'd like to take this advantage to ask you about a couple of the issues underway right now in Congress and how you view those through the prism of your perspective in looking at bipartisanship. The first one, looking at immigration reform. Yesterday, the Judiciary Committee voted out a bipartisan immigration bill. Does this give you any hope that things are changing?
Well, it's an important step forward, obviously. Anytime they can reach a bipartisan agreement on a comprehensive issue such as immigration reform that is complex and can be extremely divisive, and across it transcends so many lines from the economy to jobs to labor to economic security issues. So therefore, I think it is a positive step. But at the same time, we understand that, what was motivating both sides was obviously the paramount issues of, the political concerns on both sides, both with Republicans and Democrats, to accomplish this. In the future, I think what's going to be critically important and what will be the telltale signs that things have changed is that they recognize that the issues have been long overdue and being addressed by Congress, are grappled with, such as the economy and debt reduction and tax reform and regulatory reform, and that any other issues that come to the forefront, Congress has to develop a process by which they're willing to tackle those issues, irrespective of the politics.
Well, you mentioned the politics. The other big issue for this Congress that has caused a lot of frustration for the public is gun control and the lack of action. Are you surprised that the sides couldn't come together, even given the overwhelming popular support for legislation for universal background checks?
Yes, absolutely, Jennifer, particularly because the way in which the bill was fashioned by Senator Pat Toomey of Pennsylvania, who is, you know, a conservative Republican, and, of course, Joe Manchin, who is a conservative to moderate Democrat from West Virginia, so that they were able to break the solidity of partisanship in the United States Senate to, you know, fashion a package, certainly, I think, indicated that there was at least a possibility of getting this enacted. So many people expressed to me, how is it that something that garnered 90% support, you know, from the American people would not be enacted in the United States Senate? And I said, because, you know, sometimes the other side is just more vocal, louder, more cohesive, more organized, and perhaps well-funded. And so ultimately, people have to weigh in to the process. And that's what my book is all about, is that I think that the American people have to take charge, change the incentives in the political system, and reward those individuals who are willing to cross the political divide and develop solutions to the problems facing this country.
Senator Snow, you believe, as you just said, that change needs to come from public pressure, but many people are pretty frustrated themselves. They don't believe that they really have a voice anymore, especially compared with big money donors. How do you reengage this public that really is pretty cynical right now?
No, Jennifer, you raise an important point, and certainly I've encountered that as I've, you know, delivered addresses across this country, whether, you know, it's on college campuses or other organizations, and they all express similar frustration, you know, anger, and fearful about the failure of Congress and the lack of capacity between the president and the Congress to achieve results. So my book hopefully will engage the public. It's an extension of this effort to make people realize they do have the power to change things through their voice, through the using and harnessing the social media, just as the forces of division have done, turn the tables and mobilize the grassroots to send an unmistakable signal to lawmakers that there is popular support for common ground. That's why I created Olympia's List, because I want to contribute to candidates who are consensus builders and who are willing to bridge the divide. And I'm part of the Bipartisan Policy Center now, and that we have created a whole new common ground project in conjunction with the launching of my book. That's a whole new website, bipartisanpolicy.org. I urge people to go to that website because we want to demonstrate that we can build a national movement that can amass citizens in real time and be a rapid response to what is happening in Congress so that they have information on what can break the stalemate or to move action on key issues in Congress and how they can contact their lawmakers. And these are the issues that can break the stalemate. So we have to create a whole new movement nationally and put an emphasis and value on bipartisanship because obviously the politics of division have worked. Now we have got to develop the politics of unity and bipartisanship, and that can only come from the voice of the people, and it can be done through online technology and social media.
The phone call, if you'd like to join the conversation, is 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. You can email talk@mpbn.net, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. Our guest is Olympia Snow, who has served 34 years in the U.S. Congress, including three terms as Maine's senator. Her new book is Fighting for Common Ground, How We Can Fix the Stalemate in Congress. Senator Snow, your successor, Senator Angus King, has said that he already feels glimmers of optimism in terms of perhaps a return to bipartisanship. Do you agree with his assessment? And what do you think of his chances as an independent to effect change?
Well, first of all, I think that there are some indications of moving in that direction. I think time will tell on the consequential issues that have been ignored or overlooked over the last few years. And that is, of course, on a debt reduction package, entitlement reform, looking at those questions, and tax reform that I've been arguing and championing for a long time, and, of course, changing the regulatory process. These speak to the central issues of our economic well-being. And if Congress has the capacity to address those issues this year, that's going to be critical to the country. We cannot afford to lose another 2 years in the precious life of America. That, you know, we've lost the last 4 or 5 years where these issues have been long overlooked. I think that Senator King certainly can contribute based on his previous experience as an independent governor. His voice will be invaluable in the United States Senate. And lending support to bipartisan solutions. The more individuals you have in the political process who are willing to work across the political divide, more hope we have for America. I want to offer hope to the American people that I have a can-do spirit, and America has a can-do spirit. And we can change this. We can alter the political dynamic if we're willing to change the incentives and to speak up loudly and clearly that we want bipartisanship, compromise, and consensus building to reach the goals that are so critical to America.
In your book, you offer up some very basic solutions, among them campaign finance reform, filibuster reform, mandating that if Congress fails to pass a budget or appropriations bill, its members don't get paid. And then also the idea of mandating that Congress have a 5-day work week, which I giggled when I read it, Senator Snow, in all my years of reporting for you. I know how hard that you and Maine's Maine senators and congressmen work. I know that your staff members talk about how hard they work compared to other staff members on Capitol Hill. How has that what kind of response have you gotten from that suggestion?
It's drawn a lot of interest, frankly. It's a very practical issue. And that is that the time we're in session in a given week matters. It matters when you have Congress working a full work week in Washington on the issues. And so whether it's a 3-week period in Washington, well, they can go home on weekends, they go home Friday night, but is to have a fuller work week on several of the weeks out of the month in order to devote to the very complicated and difficult issues. The problem is when we return and have our first vote Monday night and then we're gone by Thursday afternoon or Thursday evening, it's very difficult to devote your time and your attention and your concentration on these critical issues. And if we don't have votes, then everybody obviously departs town. So it's very difficult to tackle these issues in the way in which they should be considered and explored and evaluated and worked on. And hence, you're not getting the kind of results that we should. So whether it's 3 weeks on in that fashion and then 1 week in the district or state is one way of approaching it. And as one group, No Labels, has recommended. But the point is you have more concentrated legislative weeks in order to do anything on the big issues.
All right. Before we head to a break, we have time for one call. We're going to go to Larry in Ellsworth. Larry, go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Yes, ma'am. Hello, Senator.
How are you, Larry?
I'm fine. Hopefully you are as well. I would describe myself as a Maine Republican. That is, I'm fiscally conservative, and as far as social issues, I figure you ought to leave people alone. However, the Tea Party has just totally destroyed the Republican Party as far as I'm concerned. Now, my question would be this. Let's take you, for example. Bob Dole and Orrin Hatch wrote a reply to HillaryCare back in 1993 and 94. Bob Dole ran on that in 1996, and yet you voted against the bill that he wrote, the actual bill that came up by Congress, was 95% to 96% what Bob Dole and Orrin Hatch had come up with.
Larry, we're having a hard time hearing you. Is it possible to be closer to your phone?
Can you hear me now?
It's very faint. But if you could succinctly that's much better. If you could succinctly ask your question, that would be terrific.
Yeah, well, my question is, as I said, Bob Dole and Orrin Hatch wrote health care back in 1993 and 94, and Bob Dole ran for president on that platform. And yet you, as a Republican, 14 years later, voted against it. Obamacare is 95% to 98% what Bob Dole and Orrin Hatch had written.
Well, I don't know if there was 95 to 98% what they wrote. I wasn't in the Senate at the time when they considered that legislation. But I was involved in working on the health care bill that ultimately became law, part of it in the Finance Committee, and that portion of it. The concern that I had, and I think it speaks to the problems that are developing and evolving today regarding implementation, is that it was so complex, so big, and also we didn't have answers to fundamental questions such as what will the package cost, what will the plans cost that will be offered in the exchange, are they affordable to the average American when you have an individual mandate that was inserted in this legislation. Now, there were probably pieces such as the individual mandate that was back in that bill that you described, but the point is this became a much larger package in the final analysis that I thought that was going to be extremely burdensome, and there were too many uncertainties and unknowns in terms of how it would be implemented. And I forewarned, you know, both the president and members of Congress that they should, you know, work through some of these difficulties in the bill before it became law. But now they're going to have some trouble implementing the Affordable Care Act.
All right. Well, thank you, Larry, for your question. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, your comments and questions for Olympia Snow. This is Maine Calling.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. Coming up on the next On Point, Apple in the hot seat. Lawmakers say the company dodged billions in taxes on overseas profits. We'll look at the world of offshore tax escapes. That's coming up on the next On Point from NPR.
Join us for On Point this evening at 11 p.m. Garrison Keillor and A Prairie Home Companion will be in Bangor this summer on July 27th, and you are invited. The performance will take place at Darling's Waterfront Pavilion on the Bangor waterfront. Get your tickets now while they last. We do expect a sold-out performance. To obtain your tickets, please use the special MPBN27 code and have Waterfront Concerts donate a portion of the sale to MPBN. For more information about the July 27th event and the secret MPBN27 code, visit mpbn.net and click on the Events tab, then choose A Prairie Home Companion live in Bangor. Thanks. Broadcast of Maine Calling is made possible by MPBN Radio listener contributions and by the Maine Community Foundation, working with donors and other partners to strengthen Maine's economy and communities. On the web at mainecf.org.
And welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, former three-term Senator Olympia Snow. We'd like you to join our conversation. What would you do to fix Washington? Give us a call, 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. Email talk at mpbn.net. Tweet at Maine Calling or post to our Facebook page. We're going to turn now to a Facebook question. This is from Anita in Camden. Is there any point for citizens to contact congresspeople who are not their direct representatives? How can a citizen impact legislation if her own representative votes the way she wants, but that vote is not enough to impact the overall vote? Senator Snow.
Yes, I encourage people to contact lawmakers in Congress because it is critical, and so often people underestimate their voices and the impact their views can have on elected officials in Washington. And so I am always encouraging people to express themselves because, frankly, as we hear from the forces of polarization, they're willing to weigh in and unfortunately speak louder and ultimately can have great sway. You know, we've seen that in the campaign system, and we're seeing it in Washington as well with the divisiveness that has impeded the ability of Congress to address these questions. So I would encourage people to contact, you know, their elected officials and even those who don't represent them, because it's important that they understand that people are interested and are concerned about a particular direction that Congress is taking or not taking.
Senator Snow, how much of an impact will you receiving a flood of letters on a topic have upon a congressperson or a senator? Have there been issues that were either off your radar that came on your radar because of your constituents, or have there been issues you changed your mind because of them?
No, it's very important, and I always felt it was a level of connectivity with my constituents. And I was always, asking my staff for feedback from people who contacted my office, whether through letters or emails or phone calls, whatever is the case. And now when I'm addressing groups across the country, and I'm always asked this question, and I tell people that they should not minimize or underestimate their ability to influence members of Congress and make sure that their voices are heard. You know, put it this way, if they don't hear, from people, then they can assume that they can move in a certain direction. So it is critical. And it made a big impression on me on how many people would contact the office or what they said. And yes, specific issues that they might raise that I hadn't thought about or my staff hadn't considered or overlooked, or whatever the case may be. But it is important.
To another call now. This is Arthur in Freeport. Arthur, go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Hello. Yeah, I talked to a lot of my friends in Maine, registered Democrats, Republicans, Independents, and everybody was frustrated with obstructionism in the Congress. They viewed the Republicans as obstructing without coming up with solutions. I was just wondering, since Olympia Snowe withdrew from the election, if she ever considered running as an Independent. I know a lot of people were hoping she would.
No, I maintain my party affiliation because, I've always been a Republican. That doesn't mean to say, obviously, that I've agreed with the direction of my party, and particularly in recent times. I always remain firm on the traditional principles that compelled me to become a Republican in the first place, of limited government role, strong national defense, individual opportunity and freedom. And so I have, subscribed to those basic principles. It's unfortunate that the party's moved in the direction it has. Hopefully, as a result of the last election, they're going to begin, take stock of where the party is and what they need to do to build a broader base and to be much more engaged in outreach in order to build a stronger party based on the traditional principles of the Republican Party that I just mentioned.
Arthur, thank you for your call. Yep. Senator Snowe, when you talk to Republican insiders and make the statements like you just made, what is the reception when you say this party needs to change?
Well, obviously, much hadn't changed, to my frustration, frankly, because in the past, it had always been my experience that we accommodated diversity of views within the Republican Party. And, it's very difficult to attract support from people outside the Republican Party and to encourage them to join the Republican Party if they're not willing to tolerate dissent and differing views from within the party. And as you know, the Republican National Committee just conducted their own report on analysis of, what went wrong, what they must do in the future. And hopefully they'll take that very seriously. But, many of the issues have raised over the years and op-ed pieces before the National Convention in the summer of 2012 as well, warning the party that it was at their peril for, taking very extreme positions that was going to alienate a significant portion of the population. Exactly what happened.
We'll go to John in Old Town. John, go ahead.
Yes, hi. I'd like to, first of all, mention that through the years that you were in office, Ms. Snowe, I got in touch quite regularly trying to get you to make moves, and I'm sure other people did. And I mentioned Margaret Chase Smith as being perhaps an inducement for you to do that sort of an independent thing. And I'd like to congratulate you now for finally taking the Margaret Chase Smith move and saying, enough, I'm getting out, and making a real point. I think it was a very, very powerful, powerful point that you made and are making. And I'm looking forward to reading your book. Question that I have, though, in the book, do you have suggestions to help get us back on the straight and narrow, suggestions for instance, for campaign finance reform or move to amend, things like that?
Yes, you know, I have a number of suggestions in there, and campaign finance reform is among them. Obviously, that's a longer-term issue unless Congress is really willing on both sides to come together to address that issue. I was involved in it in the past. In fact, it was my provision that was struck down by the Supreme Court and Citizens United, regrettably. It sustained the first challenge and obviously didn't survive the second with the departure of Justice Sandra Day O'Connor. So, but that has to be addressed ultimately and fundamentally because the campaigns are taking the wrong direction with the amount of money from outside groups that, you know, today probably spend more money than the candidates themselves. So something is terribly wrong in the current system. I do talk about the fact that we have to have, you know, as Jennifer mentioned earlier about the five-day work week, have a biennial budget every 2 years so that Congress can engage in oversight, no budget, no pay, which has been one of the suggestions by one of the groups, no label, because I think that's important. If they haven't passed a budget resolution, they've passed it in the House and Senate, but it still has yet to be reconciled between the two bodies, and therefore we currently still do not have a budget as a country, even though it's required statutorily by April 15th. So obviously that's important. Filibuster reform is also an additional issue. Having the regular process in Congress take hold, where you have the committees engaged in working on the issues rather than having big bills, you know, cobbled together behind closed door without the accountability and transparency that is so essential to developing credible pieces of legislation. So there are a number of issues. And more than anything else is people should become actively engaged in expressing their views, and that's why we created this website at bipartisanpolicy.org, because we want to give people not only the suggestions, but ways in which they can actually affect change in Congress in real time, because now we have the power of social media, and we should use the same means of mobilization as those who fan the flames of polarization.
Thank you for your call. And we're going to go to a Facebook question now. It's from Jessica in Cape Elizabeth. She says, how do you think progress can be made on bipartisanship when many of those becoming elected to office fundamentally do not believe in government or the role of government? She says, I'm thinking of those like Senator Cruz, who will not even let a committee form to deal with the budget. He objects continually until his view that revenue not be part of the budget is agreed to first. He also votes against things like the internet tax, not because it was bad for Texas, but because he doesn't want any revenue going to blue states.
Well, you know, in the United States Senate, obviously you're going to have people who are going to have, you know, their views on one end of the spectrum or the other in this case. He has, you know, views of it, but total anti-government involvement in many spheres of life. You know, it's interesting because President Reagan was a conservative, but he viewed, you know, government as, you know, playing an important role in a limited fashion, that it should be effective and efficient, but not eviscerated. And so we as Republicans, I think, have an important obligation to demonstrate, you know, how our positions and how our principles will nurture an environment where individual opportunity will flourish. And that is making sure that government is efficient and effective, but not, you know, undercutting the social safety net and say, well, you know, you're on your own. I mean, that is a message that obviously is going to instill fear in so many, you know, parts of the country, and certainly with a great majority of the population. So I think that they're going to have to recalibrate their positions. In the meantime, it's important for the Congress to work, and that means putting the pressure on lawmakers, on the leadership, on the president, and hold them accountable for making progress and achieving actual results on the key issues that matter to the American people and to matter to the future of this country.
Senator Snow, we're going to take a question from Eric in Corinth. But, Eric, I'm going to have you ask your question, then Senator Snow will go to a break before we have your answer. So, Eric, go ahead, please.
Good afternoon, Senator Snow. One of the problems that I have with your whole thesis of, you know, we need to have bipartisanship and, you know, Congress needs to be doing something. To me, it would seem if you do nothing, as long as you're not creating more harm than good, I don't know what's wrong with doing nothing. The part that I and a lot of others have when you talk about bipartisanship, you start with the premise in Washington that when we're talking bipartisanship, taxes are going to go up. There's no talk of reducing taxes back to the level of when Reagan was in at 28%. When we start with the premise that spending is going to go up, spending has doubled since Bill Clinton was in office, but it's got to go up even more. There's no talk of reducing spending. There's no talk of enforcing our laws on immigration. We've got to give in and come to a compromise to give people amnesty. And like, and you guys were talking about the Second Amendment when you first opened up the show. There's never any talk about reducing restrictions on the Second Amendment. There's always only more talk about more and more restrictions on the Second Amendment. And so a lot of people like me have given up on bipartisanship, and we figured that if we're going to lose the battle, we might as well just dig in our heels and go down fighting than just constantly giving in and seeing government grow and our constitutional rights being restricted.
Eric, hold the line. We're going to take a short break, and we'll have Senator Snow's answer to your question and some other calls and questions. Please stay tuned.
Tornado survivors in Moore, Oklahoma, survey the destruction.
It looked like the school had been bombed. Firefighters were pulling rocks out one at a time and passing them down a line, just trying to get to the people who are still trapped.
Recovery and rebuilding in Oklahoma City next time on The Takeaway from PRI, Public Radio International.
Join us for The Takeaway this evening at midnight. Life is better with MPBN, and MPBN wouldn't be MPBN Public Radio without you. Our fifth annual Life is Better contest is now underway and will end at the end of June. If you make a donation to MPBN before then, you'll be automatically entered into our Life is Better contest, where the grand prize, thanks to Lee Automalls, is a new 2013 Nissan Altima 2.5S. The six second-place prizes are Kindle Paperwhite 3G. Please note, no purchase or contribution is necessary to enter and will not increase your chances of winning. Void where prohibited, full contest rules and directions are at mpbn.net. Click on Support. You can also call us during business hours at 800-884-1717, extension 1201. That number, 800-884-1717, extension 1201. And thank you. Join us after Maine Calling for ideas from the CBC. Today's topic, changing our bodies, changing ourselves. That's ideas coming up after Maine Calling here on MPBN Radio.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you're listening to Maine Calling. Today, we're hearing from our former senator about her plan to get Washington working again. Joining us from NPR headquarters in Washington, D.C. is Olympia Snow. She has written a new book. Its title is Fighting for Common Ground, How We Can Fix the Stalemate in Congress. Before our break, we had a question from Eric, who is a Republican who is frustrated with bipartisanship. Senator Snow, what's your answer for Eric?
Well, first of all, there hasn't been any indication of bipartisanship for the most part over the last few years to suggest that. Obviously, Republicans and Democrats differ in terms of how to approach the whole question of debt reduction. But that has to be worked through the committee process and among members in order to reach an agreement and, of course, with the President of the United States. If we're going to accomplish the goal of reducing our long-term debt that's imperiling the future prosperity of this country, and certainly is going to affect future generations. So I disagree with the fact that bipartisanship assumes certain things like, you know, there will be only tax increases and there'll be no spending cuts, that we won't lessen the restrictions on guns and so on. I mean, I think that the fact of the matter is that you have to have a give and take in the process to accomplish something to achieve the ultimate goal. You know, for example, if you agree about a balanced budget, then you will have disagreements about how to balance that budget. But that's the nature of the whole system that was designed by our founding fathers. We wouldn't have been the United States of America, frankly, if our founding fathers didn't agree to compromise. They understood that it required courage to advance decision-making in order to create the United States of America. And that was done on consensus, and that's exactly what was accomplished, thankfully. And the same is true in Congress. I mean, unless you have all the votes, You have to make some concessions to achieve the, you know, the ultimate goal and for the greater good of the country. Is it not important to reduce, you know, overall debt? You know, I agree we have to reduce spending. We have to reduce, you know, the size of government in order to accomplish that goal. But at the same time, we should have tax reform. And then we can determine exactly what level of revenues should be raised as a percentage of gross domestic product, which, you know, I've supported a number of tax cuts over the years. But at the same token, we should be concerned that we're in uncharted territory with respect to the level of debt that we now have incurred as a percentage of the gross domestic product. And that's not going to change without Congress agreeing to a major compromise on these questions.
All right, Eric, thank you so much for your question. This is an email question from Bruce in Harpswell. Bruce says, the best long-term solution to the extreme partisanship in Congress seems to me to be doing away with safe seats. There is no way to do that for the Senate without rewriting the Constitution. What do you think of steps like having congressional districts drawn by multi-partisan bodies, as was recently done in California?
Well, one of the suggestions in my book is to address this question of creating independent redistricting commissions, because I do think that's important. That obviously is within the purview of state legislatures, and hopefully that will be the case. Maine has an independent redistricting commission, and hopefully other steps, other states will take steps and follow that example. And as I've spoken to audiences across this country, I have emphasized that point, that that will be important, because right now in the U.S. House of Representatives, based on whichever study you want to agree with, it's either 21 or 35 seats that are competitive or toss-ups out of 435.
Wow.
And that's a result of gerrymandering. And so we have to change that equation and make these districts far more competitive. Secondly, open primaries. I mean, that's another, you know, step that can be taken. And there are various iterations of that, as we've seen with what happened developed in California. We had the two top vote getters run in the general election. In that case, in that instance, it was two Democrats. Maine has a semi-open primary by allowing independents to register in one party or the other in order to vote. So to make these primaries more competitive, more open, so that you just don't get candidates that reflect a very narrow portion of the party base on either the right or the left, because that's essentially what's happened. And the final analysis, it spills over in Congress, and where they tailor all the policy positions that, you know, we ultimately voted on, that's been my experience, that reflect the narrow political base but does nothing to appeal to the broader population, because members of Congress are worried now more about primaries than they are general elections. So that has to change in the political equation. Those are two things that can be accomplished at the state level.
All right, we're going to go to Linda in East Portland. Linda, go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Good afternoon. This is Linda Godfrey, and I'm calling from the Commons in Eastport, where we are great fans of Olympia Snow.
Oh.
So how wonderful to hear you and Jennifer
Hi,
together.
Hi, Linda.
Yeah. This is going to, first of all, congratulations on your book and congratulations on the wonderful job you did on the Colbert Show.
Oh, thank you.
We're still glad that Maine is shining through you. I'm going to look to the future a tiny bit, and with the name like the Commons in Eastport, we, of course, like the words common ground in your new book title. And with your commitment to the Olympia Snow Leadership Center for Girls, and with Karen Ray here on your board, we're interested in knowing what more can we do to collaborate with you on this future dream so that the young girls in Washington County learn collaboration and courage and consensus and all those things that keeps up this wonderful tradition of women leaders from Maine on the national scene.
Well, thank you, Linda, for your interest and for those kind words. I'm very excited about creating this Leadership Institute for Women that ultimately will select young women from sophomore, junior, and senior year out of the 150 high schools and to develop a mentor for each of those young women so that we can help them to enhance their skills and their qualities and their interest and to fulfill their lifetime objectives and how they can best accomplish that and give them the guidance and counsel and advice that is always so helpful when you can learn from other people's experiences and perspectives. And so hopefully it will be a success, but I do think it is important to expose them to role models in different spheres of life and in their communities so that they can begin to think about what they want to do with their own lives and what they want to accomplish in their future. So I'm very excited about being able to contribute in this way, and thank you for asking. And we're going to want to identify mentors in various communities, and that will be important as well as we get this program underway.
Thank you, Linda, for your call. Now to Peter in Brooklyn. Peter, go ahead.
Hi. This is a little bit similar to Linda's question, but I think I'll take it a little bit further. I think what you're trying to do in Washington, D.C. is terrific, the bipartisan policy center. The question is, what do we do on the grassroots level? Because the polarization that you see in D.C. reaches also into our communities. Issues like gun control, it's very hard to have a neutral forum where people really dig into this issue and talk to each other. Tendency is for it to end up either as a pep rally or a shouting match. What do we have in Maine on the local level for institutions that will help us deal with this?
Well, you know, it's an important question, and I cite examples of different organizations in my book, and obviously, you know, mentioned the Bipartisan Policy Center because that's sort of neutral territory and working on so many issues to shrink the partisan gap in this country. But there are other organizations that have formed, you know, as give an example in Florida, you know, that where a group coalesced around a contentious issue. And then ultimately evolved into something more, so they have civility talks, so civility forums. And in fact, I spoke at a civility series in the state of Connecticut and Stanford in the fall, and you know, more than 300 people turned up at a public library at 5:30 in the afternoon because people are concerned about the very question that you raised, that it is having an effect. It's filtering down at all levels and all facets, you know, of society today, where people aren't willing to listen to one another and respect differing views, and to determine that you don't have a monopoly on all the good ideas. And so we have to restore that. And perhaps it's taking steps in the community and to build support for that kind of a forum, frankly, where you can have those conversations, because we really have to get back to that. In fact, this woman emailed me the other night because she was telling somebody, that she was on somebody's Facebook who had a totally different view politically. And somebody else said to her, "Well, I'm surprised you would even be bothering to talk to him." She said, "Well, how else are you going to make progress if you only talk to those people with whom you agree? We have to start learning how to talk to people with whom we disagree."
Thank you. Thank you for your call, Peter, and thank you, Senator Snow, for joining us. Good luck on your book tour. Olympia Snow served 34 years in the U.S. Congress, including 3 terms as Maine senator. In 2012, she founded Olympia's List, which recognizes and supports elected officials and candidates who demonstrate a commitment to solving our nation's problems. Her new book, Fighting for Common Ground, How We Can Fix the Stalemate in Congress. Today's program was produced by Jonathan Smith. Our volunteer Molly Williams answered your calls. John Keimel ran the board, and we had help from the MPBN web team. You can find past editions of Maine Calling, as well as a link to our podcast, by visiting mpbn.net/Maine Calling. Tomorrow on the program, what is being done to help the hungry in Maine? I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you've been listening to Maine Calling on the Maine Public Broadcasting Network.